Blog Talk Radio.
Not my country. My country is me and my family.
Your country's also Huerta, the governor, the landlords, Gunther Ruiz and his locusts. This little revolution we're having here.
Revolution? Revolution, please don't try to tell me about revolution. I know all about the revolutions and how they start. The people that read the books, they go to the people that don't read the books. They put people and say, ho, the time has come to have a change, huh? Shit, shush. I know what I'm talking about when I'm talking about the revolutions.
The people who read the books go to the people who can't read the books, the poor people, and say, we have to have a change so the poor people make the change, huh?
And then the people who read the books, they all sit around the big polished tables and they talk and talk and talk and eat and eat and eat. But what has happened to the poor people?
Poor people,
huh? They're dead!
Uh-oh.
That's your revolution.
So please, don't tell me about revolutions.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. Now, if you know what you're worth, then go out and get what you're worth. But you got to be willing to take the hits and not point fingers saying you ain't where you want to be because of him or her or anybody. Cowards do that, and that ain't you. You're better than that.
A palace in which there is no king or queen or dukes or earls or princes, but subjects all, subjects beholden to each other to make a better place to live. Is that too much to ask? Are we asking too much? Is it beyond our reach? Because if it is, then we are nothing but sheep being herded to the final slaughterhouse. I will not go down that way. I choose to fight back. I choose to rise, not fall. I choose to live, not die. And I know that what's within me is also within you. That's why I ask you now. Join me. Rise up with me. Rise up on the wings of this slain angel. We'll rebuild on the soul of this little warrior. We will pick up his standard.
Forget the war.
in the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberty or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together.
Security and liberty.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it's in my control.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order, a world where the rule of law, not the law of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations. We have a real chance at this new world order, an order in which a credible United Nations can use its peacekeeping role to fulfill the promise and vision of the UN's founders.
George Bush has invoked a new world order without enunciating a new American purpose.
Bush said, and it's a phrase that I often use myself, that we needed a new world order, and instead it looks like we got a lot of disorder.
Today we take an essential step in defeating terrorism while protecting the constitutional rights of all Americans. Preventing mass terror will be the responsibilities of presidents far into the future.
The Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. These are not simply words written into aging parchment. They are the foundation of liberty and justice in this country.
This is an ideological battle. Some people believe in globalism. Others of us believe in national sovereignty. It's a contest between ideologies, whether we believe in our institutions here, our national sovereignty, our constitution, or are we going to further move in the direction of international government? It's just knowledge is out there. If we look for it, you'll realize that our national sovereignty is under threat.
All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
All right, everybody. Joseph Gibson podcasting here. Understand the times in which we live today. Be live here shortly. Got me a few corrective reports here. And we're going to go ahead and get the show underway. And understanding the times in which we live today. Can we all really fully anticipate our future? Can we really live at the doorstep of freedom and tyranny? Or, you know, we got freedom and tyranny right outside your door. I mean, these word phrases, these words that we use, the history that we learn from, the evidence that's there is well documented. We're created for a people that are, as you say, just choosing to be free. That's why they came here. They weren't shot, thrown in the ocean, and come over to America for what? Because they were explored to have a new land. a land for freedom. But it's that the powers to be have brought our founders over here to the shores of this North American continent here, and we call it America, the United States. And there's a long history that's due that. And how we tell that history and how we teach others that history of what we will know and what we've learned from ourselves, decipher what is true, and try to figure out exactly where we're heading to understand what tomorrow is going to bring. We can't sit here for certain, understand what is happening around, everywhere, and to us today. We know, but really, do we? I mean, I just don't understand where a lot of these comments come in from, where people ask these questions, and we've been covering this for so long, and people should fully understand all these. We talked about this last night briefly. This, well, we touched upon it. The, I guess you could say, the backbone of what we really stand for. And some people probably want to call in right now and give their opinion, or they just don't want to say anything, or they just think that the services that we're being, this is just one example of a business or a company that's taking the things that you barter with, which is money, Federal Reserve notes, and using it for their profit or gain for a service that they're not really disclosing to you to be true. So how do we fight? Hello all in the chat room. I suppose you can hear me tonight in the chat room there. Just want to acknowledge there, we do see you in the chat room. I know there's people come and go. And, you know, I've been having audio problems. I lost my whole train of thought here for a second there, but, you know, you never know. But anyway, back to my thing here, my intro. You know, I don't have all the answers. I don't have, I guess you could say, the power. I don't have the influence to show all of you or tell all of you the answers that we strive for to succeed in life. I got a little few documentaries here tonight I'm going to play. We're going to examine solitary confinement in prisons. Solitary confinement. A very, very dark place to spend moments of your life there and under full control. So I'm going to get that pulled up here in a couple minutes, and we're going to go into that, and then, of course, we'll generate the open phones, which is the 657-383-0616. Press number 1. You can get in here connected. Press number 1, and you'll be connected to me live. Talk about anything you want to talk about. And we usually do get a very large platform here where we get, you know, people calling in, whether it be good or bad intentions, but the platform is here for you to talk to and say the things that you feel is necessary to be truthful, to understand the times in which we live today. Go ahead there, Mike. Is you there? There? No? Are you there? Out there? No? You don't want to press number 1 right now? All right, that's fine. Play a quick commercial here, and then we'll begin on with the show. Kind of lost here and trying to know where, which direction here to go for the podcast here tonight, but I usually start off with a good talking point. How they take advantage of it, I don't know. But let's see. No, I don't have any rep. No. All right. Okay. That's fine. All right. I see people don't see what I see. That's why they don't see my call board, my studio. All right, we'll be back here in a couple minutes, okay? And begin the podcast here. Understand the times in which we live today, everybody.
Walk into this room at your own risk, because it leads to the future. Not a future that will be, but one that might be. This is not a new world. It is simply an extension of what began in the old one. It has patterned itself after every dictator who has ever planted the ripping imprint of a boot on the pages of history since the beginning of time. It has refinements, technological advances, and a more sophisticated approach to the destruction of human freedom. But like every one of the super states that preceded it, it has one iron rule. Logic is an enemy and truth is a menace.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
Hey everybody, Joseph Gibson podcasting here, understanding the times in which we live today. Phone number 657-383-0616. You must press 1 on your platform for the device, whatever you got there. You can't say 1. I know it aggravates people and whatnot. But I was just covering this actually in the intro. We're all so busy going here, going there, you know, walking over who we can to get where we got to live. And a family member of mine goes, Joe, I can't believe this happened to us, close to my house, you know, stuff like that. You always get these stories, you know. I used to get them when I was a kid. I remember when we used to get the stories, you know. So, anyway, all right, I'm rambling on here. We got to try to pass this through here, this little story here. But I want to talk about the prisons and solitary confinement. If anyone's ever been in prison or they've been in solitary confinement, it's a maddening experience. It'll drive you totally insane. And real people say, well, I don't got nothing to worry about. I don't have to worry about that. I'm never going to jail. I mean, I'm not going to get kidnapped and locked up. Well, they won't say that, but I'm just putting that in there. But, you know, this, it's a place there where that you're molding men and women out there to interact with other people and not in a good way. The outcome, you know, it's just usually almost always no good.
It's not a birth certificate, Candy. And people are trying to figure out why isn't he giving his birth certificate. It's not a birth certificate.
What exactly happened on 9/11? How did they know who did this so quickly like they did Lee Harvey Oswald?
The official story of Sandy Hook has more holes in it than Swiss cheese.
Tonight we start with proof the deep state is real in America.
Conspiracy theories have taken center stage in American politics today.
But then we noticed a virus.
This is a planetary takeover plan. Fauci and Bill and Melinda Gates own the virus. They patented it 2 years ago.
Viral testing, so when you're tested, it gives them an opportunity to contaminate.
False flag amendments to then mandate mandatory vaccines.
You've heard three or four different concepts as to how it came out.
When the coronavirus pandemic hit America, frontline filmmaker Michael Kirk was already working on a film investigating the role of political conspiracy theories in our democracy.
There's been a kind of concerted effort now that everything has moved from the brink.
Once again, we're not a democracy. We are not a democracy. But they call it a democracy. And how many people up there want to raise their hand? How many people calling in right now? Joe, we're not a democracy. We're not a democracy. But yet, they just continue on with that. But anyway, let's get into our prison system. Prisons in America. Solitary confinement is a place or a way of punishing or deterring an inmate from acting out within the prison that he's in. These are not correctional institutions. These are, quite frankly, warehouses. Warehouses or torture centers. That's another good name for them, actually, that just popped into my head, torture centers. Some of these inmates, let's just put it this way. If you've ever been in any type of jail or prison, or if you're an inmate, or if you've done time, any type of shape, way, form, or whatever, or you're going to court, rip, may face you time, you need to call into this show here within the next 2 hours. And tell us a little something of what you know. I'm extending that invitation out to everybody who is interested in learning or seeing how they can make a change peacefully and lawfully here in North Carolina. You know, I just wanted to let you know that. All right, let's go here. All right, let's get this documentary up here. All right, let's go here. Okay, I'm going to need about a minute and 33 seconds. Hey, it's live radio, folks. You know, I lost my header here for my platform here for tonight, so I'm kind of winging it. Give me about a minute and 30 seconds. I'll have this documentary pulled up here for you about solitary confinement in prisons in, United States of America here. And remember now, we have over, what is it? What's the numbers out there? 2.5 million people incarcerated? Is that it? Is that the exact numbers? You know, I know for a fact that we are a country that imprisons more people than any other country numbers of people within the country and versus the people that are not in the country and versus the fact that we have more laws and more freedoms than most other countries. So, therefore, we have more opportunities to be taken advantage of and or access to rapid corruption. It's just amazing that a country that has so much, but yet treats its people so little. I mean, everything is kept away from us, and everything is kept in the dark. So they can't examine the facts or the record for itself. And that's dangerous, folks. That's dangerous. And that's not transparency. So phone number 657-383-0616, press number 1. I'm going to get this documentary up going. I promised you I would get it for you, so just give me a couple minutes here, and I will have that up. But let's play this one here, a little humor here.
Life is filled with interesting things. That's why I could never commit suicide. I'm having too much fun keeping an eye on you folks, watching what you do, human behavior. That's what I like. Humans do some really interesting things. Like, besides killing ourselves, we also kill each other. Murder. And we're the only ones who do that, by the way. Humans are the only species on Earth that deliberately kills members of another species for personal gain. Or pleasure. Sometimes it's just fun. We're also the only species that deliberately kills members of another species for personal gain. or pleasure. That's what hunters do. They kill for pleasure. That's us, human beings, interesting folks, murderers. Here's an interesting form of murder we come up with, assassination. You know what's interesting about assassination? Well, not only does it change those popularity polls in a big fucking hurry, but it's also interesting to notice who it is we assassinate. Do you ever notice who it is? Stop to think of who it is we kill. It's always people who've told us to live together in harmony and try to love one another. Jesus, Gandhi, Lincoln, John Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Medgar Evers, Malcolm X, John Lennon. They all said, try to live together peacefully. Bam! Apparently we're not ready for that. Yeah, that's difficult behavior for us. Not too bright, folks, not too bright. But if you talk to one of them about this, if you isolate one of them, you sit them down rationally, and you talk to them about the low IQs and the dumb behavior and the bad decisions, right away they start talking about education. That's the big answer to everything, education. They said, we need more money for education. We need more books, more teachers, more classrooms, more schools. We need more testing for the kids. You say to them, well, you know, we've tried all of that, and the kids still can't pass the tests. They say, oh, don't you worry about that. We're going to lower the passing grades. That's what they do in a lot of these schools now. They lower the passing grades so more kids can pass. More kids pass, the school looks good, everybody's happy, the IQ of the country slips another 2 or 3 points, and pretty soon all you'll need to get into college is a pencil. Got a pencil? Get in there. It's physics. Then everyone wonders why 17 other countries graduate more scientists than we do. Education. Politicians know that word. They use it on you. Politicians have traditionally hidden behind three things: the flag, the Bible, and children. No child left behind. No child left behind. Oh, really? Well, it wasn't long ago you were talking about giving kids a head start. Head start, left behind. Someone's losing some ground here. But there's a reason. There's a reason. There's a reason for this. There's a reason education sucks, and it's the same reason that it will never, ever, ever be fixed. It's never going to get any better. Don't look for it. Be happy with what you got. Because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. The big, the wealthy, the real owners, the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. They're irrelevant. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media news, all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the balls. They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. You know something? They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table and figure out how badly they're getting fucked by a system that threw them overboard 30 fucking years ago. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly shittier jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your fucking retirement money. They want it back, so they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. And you know something? They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later, because they own this fucking place. It's a big club, and you ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club. And by the way, it's the same big club they use to beat you over the head with all day long, when they tell you what to believe. All day long, beating you over the head in their media, telling you what to believe, what to think, and what to buy. The table is tilted, folks. The game is rigged. And nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. Good, honest, hard-working people, white collar, blue collar, doesn't matter what color shirt you have on. Good, honest, hard-working people continue. These are people of modest means. Continue to elect these rich cocksuckers who don't give a fuck about them. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't care about you at all. At all. At all. Man. You know? And nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. That's what the owners count on, the fact that Americans will probably remain willfully ignorant of the big red, white, and blue dick that's being jammed up their assholes every day. Because the owners of this country know the truth. It's called the American dream, because you have to be asleep to believe it. But say what you want about America, folks. Yeah. You can say what you want about Americans. You can call them smart, dumb, ignorant, innocent, naive, gullible, easily led, whatever you want. You're going to have to deal with them. You're going to have to deal with them because you're in the television business now. You got the all-suicide channel on cable TV.
Oh, come on. All right, here we go. Understand the times in which you live today. Back on the air here live. All right, let's get the documentary going here. Finally, I was able to get it up. I don't know what it is with these technical difficulties here lately, but I apologize, certainly, wholeheartedly. Let's get them going here. Solitary confinement inside the prisons of this country.
We're not supposed to do it, but we do it. It's kind of funny. We're just bored. We gotta have something to do. You want to make sure somebody's around. Send notes, letters, medications, and sometimes razor blades.
His history of self-injurious behavior is pretty significant. So he does a pretty good job when he does cut. So, I mean, he'll go right for a main artery or, you know, he'll tap into something that produces copious amounts and, you know, puts his life at risk. So basically right now I'm going to see if I can move him to one of our two cells that I have that are designated for constant watches. They have cameras built in. They got full glass doors.
If it's inevitable, you put us in here with knuckle, gonna hit the fan.
Another day on the job. Real cleanup right here. Real stuff. Probably average about 20 of these a month, so. Yeah. Last year, I became an expert on
blood, I guess.
It doesn't just mop up, does it?
No, it does. It coagulates. Generally, I try to saturate it with a germicide, and then I use a sheet to mop it up, and then afterwards I try to scrub it down. My heart goes out to everybody down here. I've been behind these doors, so I know what it's like to stay down here for years. You know, being behind these walls, they get to everybody, and everybody deals with it in their own particular way. As you can imagine, someone being 18 years old in a setting like this, you know, it's not really, it does a lot with your mind.
Segregation has its place when you have real dangerous prisoners, but from my perspective, it is overused throughout the United States. For the normal person who doesn't work in a facility like this, they're going to be thinking, if you punish him, you're going to make him better. And the reality is the exact opposite happens. Putting them in confinement, forgetting about them, is essentially going to make them worse. There's no question in my mind. If I have somebody that comes in with a 5-year commitment, you can have them do their whole time in segregation, but I don't want them living next to me when you release them. I think we need to make every attempt at moving them out of those cells and moving them into general population.
I want you out on the other side of that door. Because that's good for you to be on this side of the door, not that side. All right? So we got to find a way to get you out so you're not fighting with people.
We have some very, very dangerous prisoners. So on the surface, it might look crazy. But the reality is 80% of these inmates are going to be hitting the street. Okay, so we can either make them worse, okay, and create more victims when they go on the street, or we can rehabilitate them.
Adam Brulot, 10/28/17. Yeah, I've been in prison since November 28th of 2012. Got into a lot of fights in school. Started drinking at 17. Get in huge fights at parties, like 3-on-1, and winning. And everybody thought I was the coolest kid, so I just kept on doing it and doing it. And then I went too far, and I broke a kid's jaw in 7 places with one punch. That landed me an aggravated assault.
Local 613. All right.
Yep.
Secure Bravo 101, local secure, please.
I just went overboard. That's why I'm down here. I freaked out. I was screaming. I started punching stuff. I got maced and tackled. They're trying to say I started a riot. And they brought me down here. I've been down here 2 days now. I like SEG. I can handle being locked down 23 hours a day because I can read. I can write. I can do push-ups. Most of the time, I just chill. You got to relax. You can't get yourself wound up because you can't leave that room.
Sounds good to my standards. I'm always at this window, so I like the window to be clean. My face touches it, my hands touch it.
Yeah, it sucks, but I think I'm doing good.
Good. That's a good place for you to focus on.
And shag, I'm not a person that likes to talk. It breaks. When I'm inside my head too much, I get paranoid about things and ultimately get depressed. Depression is not a good thing when you're locked in your cell 23 hours a day.
Confinement has the most fascinating history in the United States. The United States was actually the leader in modern times of introducing solitary confinement to the world. It was actually introduced by the Quakers as a noble experiment in rehabilitation. There was a belief that you could put a prisoner in his own solitary cell, freed from the evil influences of modern society, and if you put them in that cell, they would become like a penitent monk, free to come close to God and to their own inner being, and they would naturally heal from the evils of the outside society. It was a noble experiment, and it was an absolute catastrophe. By the 1830s, statistical evidence began to accumulate that there was an inordinate incidence of psychosis, suicide, and that people just deteriorated. By 1890, there was major condemnation of the institution by the United States Supreme Court. And so the experiment with solitary confinement gradually diminished as evidence became unmistakable that this was causing disastrous psychiatric consequences.
On our special segment tonight, the subject is overcrowding, prison overcrowding.
The state has the nation's largest prison system and also one of the most overcrowded.
Outdated, overcrowded, and near a state of crisis.
With 3 times as many inmates.
So after the Quakers experiment, the United States abandoned the use of solitary confinement. But then in the 1970s, we began to put unprecedented numbers of people in prison. And so you had terribly overcrowded conditions and prisons that looked like they were about to become out of control.
Prison populations reached an all-time high in this country last month, and one prison burst under the strain. The inmates set fire to 13 buildings and then attacked prison guards.
The other thing that happened is that there were increasing numbers of mentally ill prisoners coming into the prison system. Their behavior was harder to understand. It was harder to control. Prison systems didn't have the resources to properly deal with them.
Marion, America's toughest prison. Conditions are so tense, officials now say the prison is in a virtual state of siege.
In October 1983, two inmates already serving life sentences murdered two guards in the same cell block the same day.
Well, in 1983, there were two officers within 24 hours that were killed by the Aryan Brotherhood. The staff at Marion were completely demoralized. They felt that we had to do something to protect them from these inmates, and we had to do something to protect inmates from these inmates. The bureau director got involved and said to lock it down. It wasn't just a day, it wasn't a week, it was a permanent lockdown.
The entire prison was locked down. That is, every man was confined to his cell to restore order.
Now there is nearly one guard for every inmate. Unruly inmates can be chained to their concrete slab beds for hours, even days.
The high security, the lockdown, was created out of necessity to maintain control of the inmates, confidence, and protection of the staff that have to face these kinds of individuals on a daily basis. We never wavered our belief that this was a necessity.
Their response to it was to employ very large-scale solitary confinement, put a ton of people in solitary, which took away opportunities for programming, opportunities for social interaction. And that model of utter total control and harsh punishment took off in the United States, so that over time we've developed more and more supermax prisons where everyone's in solitary confinement.
I think segregation to a point does correct behavior. For the people who felt we were too hard or harsh, well, what alternatives did we have? What choices did we have? Our job is to protect the inmates and the staff and to allow people to get through their time and go out as respectable citizens, that type of thing. But what are you going to do with those people who don't want that to happen? You got a better answer. I wish we did. I always said, you know, I wish we had some social medicine or a magic wand that we could use to correct people's behavior, but there's no such thing.
He's going to have to demonstrate the behaviors that we're looking for before we're ready to reintegrate him in general population. He's going to have to show us and demonstrate to us that the likelihood of him being involved with an assault or a crime is diminished significantly.
Listen, you got 4 months left. You start behaving and we'll figure something out. You know, let me tell you that if you put some behavior together, then we'll take a look at some point moving you out of here so you can be released.
word that can help you.
No, I need to do. I need to go to school. And I want my GED. That's all I ask.
Okay.
I'm not going to go out there and scram for another job.
Five.
Selling drugs and because I don't have no education.
That's fair, okay? I told you at your door yesterday, give me a shot. Give me a chance. If I fill you full of then you do what you think you got to do, okay? And we'll do what we got to do, all right? We'll do our best to get you the help you need, okay? But I need you to do your part, okay? I need to keep your head screwed on straight, okay? Thanks for coming out and talking, all right?
Yep.
Richard Staherski, 29297. Was convicted of robbery and a crime of violence and possession of a stolen firearm. Here. I was always getting in trouble as a kid. Pretty much I grew up around violence. And when I was real young, I was in a place for young kids. Who have, like, behavior problems and whatnot. And then, when I was 17, I went to a regular prison. I did most offense in SEG. I think it had an effect on me. Because it made me where I don't care. It doesn't bother me. Nothing. And then it just progressed from there. Got out, went in. Got out, went in. Then I end up in SEG here. 2003, I was out in population and I stabbed an inmate 23 times. I got placed in segregation and stabbed another inmate out here in the red cages and assaulted a bunch of COs, lit a couple fires, escaped out of my cell. You name it, I've done it. And then they let me back out to population. And to be honest with you, I was weirded out, because you're in a cell 23 hours a day. You're not used to people walking behind you, talking to you real loud, and getting out felt really weird. Kind of like first day at school, except like times worse. You know what I mean? It's weird being around groups of people after being so segregated for so long.
Enjoy this.
Okay.
And see if you guys put it on a piece of paper. So I'm going to get a piece of paper for you.
All right, let me get this piece of paper. Now we're into puzzle time. Oh, my gosh. You see how enjoyable these guys are? I mean, they really are. They don't want to be broken. They don't want to be upset. They want contact that's meaningful.
I got a present for you. There we go.
This is a good one.
No conferring with each other either.
So the idea is then to see if there's a way to keep mental health in their cell without having to be there. So that we use a transitional object, something that represents me.
We'll see if you got that by Monday.
If you notice, I didn't just hand them pieces of paper. I made contact with each of them. We've had a nice interaction. So and I've got them off the grumpy kinds of I'm upset and everything and reconnected with them, engaged with them. And then I'll be there to follow up with this piece, and they'll be all excited, especially if they've accomplished this thing.
Now, once you go in one direction, coming back the other way is another line.
The other thing that they're unaware of is the actual thing that they're working on has clinical component attached to it that I'll be them using the next time I meet them. Because if the solution has to do with other ways of looking at problems. Get out of his egg. I think my character's pretty good overall. If you don't want to change, you ain't going to change.
I'm going to chunk a little hot one. Trade him or whatever you want to do it.
No.
Obligation is to continue to provide him with the opportunity to change. And I don't hesitate on a decision at all.
All right, somebody got to get north.
You never can tell what's going to change somebody around, whether it's a 5-minute discussion or 300 hours of therapy. Essentially, I still believe that we can change.
I'm happy, content, but if I stab somebody and I get shipped out, it's all over again. I really don't care. My realistic plan is to live as good as I can in here. That is my plan. I'm just hanging out. That's what I'm doing. Hanging out, making the best of that situation.
Why we don't like to use segregation, but sometimes it's necessary. Mr. Brulot was engaged in some very, very serious behavior while he was in general population. So without a doubt, it was the right place for him.
Did he spend too long inside?
That's a real hard question to answer.
There's a lot of gray area in some of the decisions that we make.
There's no exact science to any one of these guys. You have to try to figure them out as we go along. But ultimately, when we're moving him back into the general population, we have to be certain that the staff are going to be safe, that the other inmates are going to be safe, and that he's going to be safe.
Before you went to SEG, did you ever imagine that you would cut yourself like that?
No, never. I didn't even know what it was. I seen a couple people doing it, so then I started doing it. I'm gonna try to be normal again.
I was done, I walked up to the desk. The female that was on had her back to me through the two shanks on the desk. And I told her, I said, I'm not here to hurt you. I held my hands up like this and go, I'm going to turn around, put my hands behind my back, cuff me. I turned around, put my hands behind my back, she froze up. I think she was kind of a little in shock. She just didn't know what the hell was going on. She's like, is that your blood? Is that somebody's blood? Is that yours? I said, hello, don't ask no questions. Just cuff me up, call your cop. Am I a violent inmate? I can be, yes. You put me in certain situations, I am going to be like that.
And the numbers have continued to go down in the SEG unit. So that tells me that we're doing a better job at keeping people out and of getting them out sooner. I also think that we're doing a better job of equipping them when they leave so that they have more of a chance of being successful when they return to their housing unit. But quite honestly, even as a psychologist, I tell you that we're never going to compromise safety and security for the staff or for the offenders in the name of treatment. It has to be a balancing act.
Significantly decrease it, largely by just not punishing it. So that was the first change in culture, that punishment doesn't work. Now it's all about treatment. How do we work together so that you get better?
Right.
And we will do whatever's necessary to make you better.
That's very mature.
You're 20?
Yeah.
Mature.
It's not mature, it's mature. I tell everybody that.
Mr. Fickett's still pretty young, so you still had a chance to look at some potential change for him.
So do you feel the same?
So he's had sex for four times, five times, but each time he leaves, he's moved further. He's really kind of getting it. He realizes we didn't send him a seg to really show him who's boss and kick him in the ass. It's been a seg because you really messed up. We're not going to let you hurt people. We're not going to let you do this. That's not helpful to you as a human being. It's not going to get you out of here. And we're going to stop you. And we'll stop you every time. And then we're going to move you forward again.
Trying to do that. We try to give them, you know, the best chance to change as possibly can. And sometimes we're successful, sometimes we're not. You know?
Maybe not permanently, but it won't be easy to change back. I mean, as far as functioning in the real world, I think it's affect me in extreme ways. And I was out for 6 months, and I still couldn't go into Walmart without either being high or having a panic attack. Like, it may just be because I've spent so much time out of the real world, but my honest opinion is because it's because I've spent so much time in a cell by myself.
But you definitely feel paranoid when you get out at the beginning. It was too much for me. It was way too much for me. I ran away. Didn't want to deal with anything. Don't think I could at the time. And I met up with my cousin Mikey, and we bought a tent and some camping equipment and went out in the middle of the woods and camped there for like 6 months because I couldn't handle it out here. Couldn't handle getting an apartment. Couldn't get a job. So I had no money, no transportation, no nothing. A week went by, we had a nice little fortress made up out there. All camoed out. I don't know, it just makes you totally relax sitting out there. No way in hell someone's going to show up out there unless they're lost. Don't have to answer to anybody. Me and one other person, pretty much a cellmate out in the woods. What we called each other, cellies. I just wanted to be me, myself, and get my head right. And I couldn't do that with people around, so the woods helped. I was lost.
That helps.
the both of us don't want him to go back. I know he won't.
It helps hearing it, though. Every once in a while, you need to hear it.
Concrete box and I've tried to go over this in detail with a lot of people. And people just, you know, they don't think it affects them, even if you haven't been in prison. It affects you because these are your next-door neighbors. These are people you're going to have to deal with and associate yourself with. And you will. And I'm not trying to justify anyone hurting anybody or trying to downplay crime. But to talk about the prison system, as people don't understand, is that the government itself is initiating a lot of this because of the corruption, the lies, and punishment. The name in it itself is a deception, just like the Federal Reserve I always talk about. It's a deception. The Department of Corrections I'm referring to, it's not correcting. There's no corrections. There's no type of correcting anybody or anything when you go to prison. It's you're another number. You're a body being shuffled from one place to another, and they have certain rules, nonsense rules, bullshit rules, and they put you in, they punish you. Now they say, well, prison is not supposed to be a daycare. It's not supposed to be a place. Well, then don't call it the Department of Corrections. Don't do that. Don't lie from the onset. Don't have courts that say certain things, family courts, this and that court, whatever court, you know, and then have people fronting to pretend to help the next person out. Because do that. Just call it for what it is. You know, let's go back to the caveman days. You know, let's beat each other over the head with a club. You know, because that's what you're teaching a lot of people to do. And people say, well, what are we going to do about it? What are you going to do? Now we're going to micromanage each crime now. Well, if you're a rapist, then you deserve this. If you're this, you're that. And, well, yeah, if you steal a candy bar, then you should get it. Listen, there are better ways to correct. We live in a society, we live in a world with all this technology and all the answers to everything. We're going to the moon, and we're going here. We got all the answers, but yet we have this type of punishment that's inside the prisons across America. Let's just, stick on America. You don't want to go into other countries and whatnot. Let's talk about America here. You know, we have these places that we call prison that it affects millions of people across the country. And what is the answer? What is the answer to crime and punishment? What is the answer to crime and corrections? What is the answer to bettering our society? Helping out your next door neighbor. And we ask this question always on this podcast, understanding the times in which we live today, to help better ourselves or better the society or our culture or our people or our government or whatnot, trying to find answers. But people, we hear it on this show also. We hear the idiots out there. You have the people don't have, and then you see nobody has time. Nobody wants to correct the situations that we're in until the problem smacks us right upside the head. Because it will, sooner or later, it will affect you, these things that we talk about here. This particular problem will affect somebody that's listening here tonight or that's on the call tonight. It did affect me in my life also. And it's absolutely true. It's nobody understands. And nobody gets it. And until it happens to you or them, nobody's going to talk about it and nobody's going to really come up with the solution or solutions to change. And the problem, the real sad problem is at the end of the day is the children out there that we leave behind when we think we have all the answers or try to come up with solutions. It's the children that we're letting down. We're letting down the younger generation. And it's all about selfishness. We are a selfish, selfish people. You know, because we sit there and say one thing, but yet we do something different. We're quick to point our fingers, but not take any of the blame. And I think that's the best way for me to analyze what just I played there, if anyone was able to stay on the call long enough to hear it. So phone number 657-383-0616. And again, this is an aspect of understanding the times in which we live today, and it's something that we really need to address as a people. And I believe solitary confinement you know, let me throw one number out there. Between the years 2011 and 2017, you know, I don't even want to put this number out there. It's so disgusting. But, you know, inmates in solitary confinement are out of, let's see, 8 out of 100 are rehabilitated. Okay, and that's 8 out of 100 are rehabilitated. That's 8 people out of 100. That's crazy. That's in one state. That's okay, that number comes from. Imagine across the country what the numbers are. I mean, imagine it taking 100 people to send them to the Department of Corrections and only 8 are rehabilitated. Now, what's their definition of rehabilitated? Not returning to prison? Not returning to segregation? Well, it's not returning back to segregation. That's not even being rehabilitated in the terms that we look at as a society, as not going back to jail and getting back on your feet and getting a job and starting a family and doing the right thing. So that's pretty sad. That's pretty sad. Pretty sad in a country that has so much. Let me check the phone boards here. Anybody wants to call in here, 657-383-0616. Press number 1, and we'll get you live here on the podcast. I'm going to take my first call here. We'll go to 314. Go ahead. 314. Go ahead. You're live.
Mr. Gibson, how are you tonight?
Doing all right. How are you?
Well, I can't get some hosts on some shows. They realize that you, Mr. Gibson, are being blamed for something that you don't even have any power or control over.
What would that be?
One is the control of the police of a community.
Okay.
And another is the curriculum in a school district. This is black host that come on and saying that the days, and I imagine when they say the days, Mr. Gibson, they're talking about you, dummy down the curriculum.
Okay.
Now, let me ask you something. When I read this, are they talking about you when it comes to, when it comes to the school district you live in? But what about other school districts? Now, listen to this. This is Missouri State Statutes, Chapter 160. 160.516. Title, Curriculum, Textbooks, and Other Instructional Material, not to be mandated by state board or department exceptions. Now, listen to this. Notwithstanding the provisions of Section 160.514, the State Board of Education and the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education shall not be authorized to mandate and are expressly prohibited from mandating the curriculum, textbooks, and other instructional materials to be used in public schools. And it said each local school board shall be responsible for the approval and adoption of curriculum used by the school district. Now, let me ask you something. If that curriculum appears to be a dummy down, and this is a black school district, well, are you, Mr. Gibson, a white man, is that your responsibility? You don't even live in the school district. Whose responsibility is that, Mr. Gibson?
Well, I don't know, to be honest with you, whose responsibility it would be. I mean, if I don't live there and I'm not partaking in that, I don't have any children in that school district, or I'm not on the board, or I'm not making any decisions. But, yeah, I mean, if it's a part of my country or my state or my community, and I guess it would be my responsibility to be alerted or to probably take notice and examine what's going
Mr. Gibson,
on there. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of like a loaded question in a way. I don't know.
Mr. Gibson, I just read what the law says. The law says it's that you, the parent, stakeholder, family of that district, you are responsible for the curriculum, textbooks, and instructional material. not the State Board of Education or the elementary and secondary board of education. It's you. If we're talking about a black district, it's you, black folks. That's your responsibility, not Mr. Gibson's responsibility. He's responsible in the district he live in.
Okay, if you're talking about individual, okay, if you're talking about the education itself or the curriculum that they're teaching, yeah, I mean, you know, I guess they would say that. I don't like really categorizing people, though, saying, you know, that that's just the blacks or that's just the whites. I mean, you know what I mean?
That's who
live
in the district, Mr. Gibson. I mean,
I don't live in the district, yeah.
That's just the way the district is composed,
though. But those people that are being taught that in that district are going to move elsewhere in the country, though, maybe one day, and it's going to affect me, right?
Well, that's not the point. The point is that you got people that blame you for what's not happening in a particular district, and these are ones I'm going to mention is black. Well, it's Normandy, Jennings, Ferguson, Florissant. You've heard of Ferguson, I'm sure. These are majority, supermajority black districts. And the law is telling the people of those districts, you have the power over what your child is being taught or not taught. That's not Mr. Gibson, the proverbial day.
Okay. Well, what would you suggest then? How would that... how would we fix this then, you think, in your opinion?
I would say this. They need to stop blaming you, Mr. Gibson, for what is not happening in their school district where they have been provided the exclusive authority over what goes on. Not you, Mr. Gibson, the white man,
stop
on
blaming.
A proverbial
okay, stop.
Day.
Okay, I got you. Okay, it makes sense.
Do you understand?
Yeah, now I got you fully, 100%. Okay.
Yeah, they're blaming you. And guess what your title is? You are the
what?
Proverbial day. Let me read something else to you, too, real quick.
Okay.
Section 1. Section 3. This is the Missouri Constitution, which was ratified in 1875. It says this. Powers of the people over internal affairs, constitution, and form of government. Now, they're talking to a municipality which the constitution of a state allows and permits municipalities, villages, and cities to exist, to form and exist. Now, listen to what this law says. That the people of this state shall have the inherent, sole, and exclusive right to regulate the internal government, and get this, Mr. Gibson, the police thereof, and to alter and abolish their constitution and form of government whenever they may deem it necessary to their safety and happiness, provided such change does not repugnant to the Constitution of the United States. What did it say about the police, Mr. Gibson? That you have the power to regulate the police.
Yeah.
It's not saying that you, Mr. Gibson, who have been given the proverbial title of day, for instance, like in Ferguson. Ferguson was a majority black population. And in 2014, when Mike Brown was justifiably killed by Derek Wilson, who had came from Jennings, an adjacent town. The people of that town, being the majority black, if they felt discomfort with, they had the power to change the police department. They had the power to set the rules, regulations by which they operate. Not the federal government, Barack Obama, or whether it was Ronald Reagan, or we can go back to Franklin Delano Roosevelt. It was the people of that community, which happened to be black, and not your responsibility, Mr. Gibson, being that you are being labeled the day, saying that it's your excuse It's your reason why I come.
Now, you're using that in a broad. You're using that in a broad synopsis type of way, where they didn't really call out my name as an individual. They used me
I'm just using you because you're a white man.
Oh, okay. So it's all white people. Okay, so
is they blame white people.
I got you. Well, that's interesting.
They blame white
Sarge.
People.
I think this is Sarge.
They blame white people for what's not going on when they themselves have the power. They have been given the authority to make the difference.
You know, there's no accountability.
Right.
Everyone wants to pass the buck on somebody else. You know what I mean?
And I've told you this before, until you start telling them that, see, then they won't get it. They don't believe me.
Well, yeah. Well, I kind
go
of
ahead
up,
now,
well,
bring Sonya.
Yeah, well, I kind of, that's why I was talking about prisons also here, you know, the prisons here tonight and the Department of Corrections. You know, everything is past the buck. Pass the buck down to somebody else. We have problems here that nobody wants to stand up and take individual responsibility for, and look at it and paint, use the paintbrush as to broaden it out and say we're all in this together. We all got to fix this problem. Stop saying, you know, it's this one, that one, or this one, and yet we want to punish somebody, or we just want to punish one group of people, or, you know, for the problems that we all have created together in a way. It's not.
I
just
got an answer for
that, like,
but go ahead to your next caller.
Okay, I'll let you ponder that for a minute. But, yeah, again, just real quick, that's what we're talking about, too, also, though, tonight, the prisons and whatnot. And look, this is a problem that we face. We're a sick country here that needs to be healed. But we have to be healed by fixing the problem. So I'll take on another caller here. Private caller, go ahead.
Yes, Joe, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you fine. Go ahead.
Oh, okay, because I didn't hear the unmuted.
Yeah, people have been saying that lately. They're not hearing the unmuted
thing.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, yesterday I was listening to your show in the nighttime. And I believe it's one of the callers is from Washington. And
yes.
He was talking about how they want, like, robots to patrol the city. Have you ever seen the documentary called Shadowgate? It's by Millie Weaver. She used to work for Jones for, like, InfoWars. And they talk about that, how one of the people that worked under, like, Obama, he's one of the directors that has a lot of money in that, on those robots. And towards the end of the, like, documentary, she gets into that, and she actually shows, like, the robots, like, being used. And that's all that I wanted to say, because I was just tripping out on that, you know?
Okay. All right. Well, I don't remember the caller last night that brought it up, but I do know about robots and a little bit there, AI and the programs out there. I mean, there was a caller that we had one time. I think that was the one from Washington where we talked about the robots that they're using in factories now, especially in Europe, and one of the robots actually murdered somebody. So that's another aspect. Maybe they're going to have robots as prison guards soon, you know, watching us. Maybe the whole society is going to be. Robots are going to be watching us, telling us what to do. We'll be enslaved by robots, you know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You never know. I mean, look, they want to dwindle the population down to 500 million so they can manage it better. We know that. The Georgia Guidestones say that. So.
Oh, yeah.
And they're doing a good job with the prison systems right now because, look, we got millions of people incarcerated. You know, so, you know, hey, we're one big prison planet, I guess, pretty soon, you know. But, yeah.
Exactly.
it's scary. It's scary.
That's crazy.
You know?
Yeah.
But, hey, I'll put you back on mute, and if you want to come back in, you just press 1, and I'll get you back on, okay?
Okay, cool. Thank you very much.
All right, man. Thanks for calling in. I appreciate it. Next caller, private caller. Go ahead.
Yeah, Joe, boy, one thing about following Bianchi, he simplifies what I need to say. So I'll go on to some other things going on that I'd like to bring to your attention. And
sure.
It's what came out today in the so-called insurrection hearings. Talk about political pornography and propaganda. This had to take the cake. This was really something to see. If you haven't seen it, you got to go back and look at it. Talk about a Soviet-style show trial. Anyway.
Well, that's a good topic, actually. That's a coincides with my topic tonight about prisons. We got, what, 400 or 500 of men and women across the country that are locked in solitary confinement right now from participating in Washington, D.C.
They're using these insurrection hearings to provide the justification for it. And
wow.
Let me tell you what went down today with a congressman from Oklahoma, a so-called Republican named Mark Wayne Mullen. He was on C-SPAN today, and he commended, did you hear what I said? C-O-M-M-E-N-D, commended, well, E-D, add E-D to it, the Capitol Hill police officer shot and killed Ashley Babbitt. Now, this is what he said, and I'm quoting. After it happened, he came over. He was physically and emotionally distraught. I actually gave him a hug, and I said, sir, you did what you had to do. He went on to suggest that Babbitt, who refused to name, didn't even name the victim. He didn't say anything about Babbitt. He said Babbitt was going to steal that officer's gun and use it against him. And then he went on to say how he hugged this cop who shot Babbitt and told him that, quote, he did what he had to do. Now, let me tell you something, Joe. I'd like to know where this sumbitch, number one, gets off nominating himself to be a spokesman for this cop, number two, to be a spokesman of the Capitol Police, and number three, to read Ashley Babbitt's mind because she never made it through the window frame. She was shot dead before she even got through the window frame.
I had
what
that documentary.
What was the thing to read her mind before she got killed?
Yeah. I had that last night on, actually, where they shot. I you guys couldn't see the video.
Did you hear this?
But I was
this
playing
congressman.
It, you know. Yeah.
Mark Wayne Mullen. He actually said this. They ought to subpoena his ass up there and ask him, who did you hug? And then, in fact, was he emotionally distraught? And how do you know that Ashley Babbitt was going to take his gun?
Well, this is
actually, they're cop.
No, wait,
cop.
That ain't all, though. I got some more for you here, man.
All right, go ahead, sir.
I watched the hearings, and I watched these Capitol Hill cops get up there, Officers Harry Dunn, Aquilino Gonnell, Michael Finone, and Daniel Hodges. And, you know what I watched? I watched an emotional porn show. I've never seen police officers, even police officers, in peril of their lives. Look, I'm telling you, I've been at riots and demonstrations. I had to wear the black riot gear, the black helmet, the black padded riot suit with the shin guards, okay? Been there, done that. Maybe it wasn't quite as bad as some of the things that went on in the Capitol, but I had to be part of a team. You know, we had a team standing behind the main line. It was in a wedge formation, with an arrow wedge formation would look like. It would split the crowd, and the people in the arrow shafts of the arrow would go into the crowd to pull out people who they wanted arrested, who had done specific acts of violence, particularly against police officers in line formation. I've had to do that. I've been called names like you wouldn't believe. I mean, talk about calling names. Calling me N-words, calling me coons, calling me Uncle Tom's, calling me every kind of name you can imagine. I never once blubbered about it. You had this one guy up there who's a political activist cop, the guy named Harry Dunn. He's up there blubbering like a big baby. I couldn't believe what I was looking at. So, man, do you realize that when you became a police officer, took the oath, pin on the badge, there are going to be people who hate your guts. In fact, will try to beat your ass and kill you? What,
yeah.
You surprised by this? What kind of a cop were you?
I know.
I couldn't believe what I was watching up there. This is all Nancy Pelosi doing this stuff to provide justification for what's going to come out of this hearing, a crackdown on dissidents, on dissent itself. That's all this is. It's all this theater is for.
You're absolutely correct.
It was a disgrace.
Yeah. Well, real quick, Bianchi, before you get in there, you know, a former State Department official calls for placing vaccinated people in safe havens away from unvaccinated people. So, again, this coincides with my topic here, prison. America, one big prison, and that's what we're doing, and that's what we're used to, segregating people that don't go with the norm or the narrative of how the media or our government actors, corporate actors, portray us as. And if you're not part of the big club, you're not in it. You know what I mean? You're not in the big club, you know? So go ahead, Bianchi.
Well, what this cop, this Capitol Police officer, done to Babbitt is tantamount to what people want to accuse the cop that detained and incapacitated George Floyd. He killed her, they say. So he killed her. She was on two knees and two hands, from what I hear. Now, what kind of threat is that?
And you're
actually
talking about the woman at the Capitol that was shot, right?
Climbing through a window, close behind her, almost within arm's reach, were two SWAT police officers clad in black gear and carrying AR-15s. They were right behind her. She was going through the window.
Are you talking about the woman inside the Capitol? Are you talking about the woman
inside
the Capitol?
Yes. She had one foot inside the window.
She had the
other two hands on either side of the vertical window frame, and she was preparing to come through the window frame.
Yes.
She shot her in the act of doing that. She was in no position to take his gun.
Yes, I know.
And here's another thing. If he shot her and the other cops was behind her, he put the other cops in line of danger also.
I don't think he could see the other cops behind her, though. I don't think he could. There was a crowd of people. They were all trying to get through the doors, and she climbed up into the window frame, and that's when he went bang and shot her right there.
All right,
well,
take
the
cops away. Let's take them away for the sake of argument. There is no way that woman posed a threat of deadly imminent force to him or anyone else.
Correct.
At that precise moment that he pulled the trigger.
Yeah.
And not only that, even if the cops weren't behind her, there was crowds of people behind her where a stray bullet could have went and injured or killed somebody else.
Well, I think they wanted to kill as many people as they could.
This thing is a dog and pony show, man. It is nothing more than an attempt to justify a crackdown on dissent.
Well, America's only one step away from South Africa-style social implosion. I'm going to tell you that right now. You know, we're
well,
only one step away.
Only if you let it happen. Only if you let it happen.
If I let it happen. Well, how about this one? Let me read this one real quick here. On the global news front, I have been watching one event with special attention, mainly because it seems like almost no one else is. I'm speaking, of course, about the social and economic collapse in South Africa that has been escalating over the past couple weeks. What is strange to me is that certain perils between South Africa and the U.S. are being summarily, basically ignored. The South African situation is more exaggerated version of what is happening in America, and we need to consider if it is merely a preview of future events as the extra financial protections in the U.S. begin to fall away. South Africa's government under the ANC, African National Congress, was already going full communist in 2018 and 2019 before the COVID pandemic. Under proposed amendments to the Constitution, they demanded that reparations be taken from white farmers in the form of land grabs, which would then be redistributed to black citizens. This is the classic critical race theory argument, that because colonialism once existed, all beneficiaries and their supposed descendants owe dues to the descendants of indigenous people who lost their lands. The problem is only the descendants of white colonists are required to pay dues. This is exactly the same path that socialist Marxists in the Democratic Party are pursuing in the U.S., with some states and cities demanding reparations for blacks be written into law because of slavery nearly 200 years ago. The reparations movement is tiny, but like all other social justice initiatives, is gaining power because politicians and corporations are supporting it artificially. Why? That's easy. It's all about divide and conquer. Go ahead there, Sarge.
Well, I got a question.
I'm telling you, look, we are now looking at what happens when you mix critical race theory with democracy. You know, you don't protect the rights of the minority. That's what our constitutional republic does, is ensure that no matter what the majority votes for, the minority's rights are protected. It doesn't matter how many people want to lynch and string up a rapist, a child rapist or molester, that molester is entitled under our constitution to due process under the law. No matter how many people want to do away with them, immediately.
That's right.
And that's
the difference
between a republic that protects the rights of the minority and a democracy combined with critical race theory. You now see what awaits us if we let it happen.
That's
well,
right.
Well, I got
that's
a question
right.
to both
yeah.
of you.
Go ahead, Bianca. Go ahead.
I got a question. Why come this administration don't offer 1.5 or 2 million whites to come here and seek refuge from South Africa?
There you go. There you go. Immigration, right? I mean, you know.
Yeah. Let's offer.
They vote for Democrats. That's why. Like with the Cubans.
Wait a minute. Let's offer 1.5 to 2 million South African whites refuge here in the United States. Give them what? How much did New York give their illegals? The same amount.
$12,000.
Give them $12,000 apiece so that they can relocate under the protection and the comfort of the United States and get away from the tyranny that they're being experienced.
They
get the vote.
Get
the rubber ducky
vote.
Boats.
They won't vote for demon rats.
Get the rubber ducky boats. We'll get them all on, like the Cuban crisis.
It's never
the
happened.
You've got to
convince
right
them that they're from El Salvador or something.
You know, I mean, it's crazy. It's insane, but that's a good point.
And that's
though.
What we should. That's what should
what
be
we
demanded.
Call them, what
we don't call them refugees.
Them as to who they are. They won't allow people who won't vote for demon rats.
Well, then we need to. Oh, well, see, here's the thing. You got to bring out the hypocrisy within these groups. See, we know
that's
what's going
point.
On. We know what's going on. So let's offer 1.5 to 2 million white South Africans who are being brutalized, who are being threatened, who have been lured to the point of refugee. Let's offer them refuge here in the United States, and then distribute them around the area, around the country, in some of your depleted cities.
Well,
there you go.
Like
that's Chicago.
Idea, but believe me, it ain't gonna fly with the Biden administration in charge.
Well, no, now wait a second, because they're white. What we got to do is where we got to put them. We'll put them in Washington D.C. or what? Or put them with the farmers. You know, give them farmland. We'll give them dairy farms.
Put them in.
North,
put them
North
in
North
about 500,000 in Georgia.
They got to go to a blue state.
Oh, okay.
Put
right,
put
well,
about 500,000 in Georgia. Put about 200,000 in Texas, states that they're trying to turn purple.
Yeah.
Well, South Africa, you know, the government's response to the COVID is so brutal and ongoing. The lockdowns are some of the most strict in the world. You know, I mean, it's terrible. It's terrible over there. I mean, it's really bad. But it's coming over here, though. It's coming. It's coming, man. Whatever happens over there, South Africa, Australia, and Europe comes here eventually. You know, and assume sooner than later, I think this is coming. And they're talking August. They're saying this thing's going to hit the fan in August. That's what they're saying. The Great Reset. That's what they're saying. It's coming. It's coming. And we played it here on this show, you know. But nobody wants to pay attention. Nobody wants to listen. Nobody cares. Everybody's too busy. You know, I mean, I don't know. I just don't know.
Well, you know, Joseph, if people are just sitting on their hands, what else can you say? My goodness, what
I
you want to, you don't play every historical similarity of what you're seeing played out here that has played out, unfortunately, and disastrously in history and elsewhere around the world with other groups.
We need voices, Bianca. We need voices. We can't do it on just one podcast show. We got to unite the people on the airwaves. The alternative, you're not going to do it on Fox News. You're not going to do it on the TV until we get our own TV show. Well, I guess maybe we won't be heard anywhere, you know? I don't know. What do you think, Sarge?
You know, the thing about getting people united is that you're going to have to go to people who have an inclination to be united. We can't assume that we can unite people even with a good message. But there are people out there who show the inclination to unite around causes they have a shared belief in. Those are the people you have to get. You're not going to get everybody. They didn't get everybody during the American Revolution. That was
only 3%.
Maybe what, 10%? Actively participating in the revolution?
3%, Sarge. 3%. They say it was a little bit less than 3%.
There you go. But you don't need everybody. Remember, you don't need everybody. You need a substantial number that is committed.
Well, after this show here, I'm heading over to Coast there with Eddie. We know Eddie comes on here on this podcast, so he asked me to come over there. Hopefully you guys will join me over there. We're going to go raid his show and call in, jump onto his topics there. You know, this is what we got to do. We got to we've got to keep the voice going. Look, we're all here in the evening time usually doing this podcast show. We need voices. I mean, I know, you know, I mean, you know, we're hitting 20,000 people here during throughout a 24-hour period on my podcast. 20,000. I got 21,000 listens over a 24-hour span, whether they're downloading, listening, clicking on it, going away, whatever they do, calling in, whatever. So, you know, we need more than that. You need more than that to make a change. You know, we got to. I mean, you know, I like I said, I just don't know how else you said like-minded people. But how many like-minded people are out there, Sarge, that aren't at work having to, you know, that can't
I think there are literally millions. I think you can easily get this. Remember, there's 330 million people in this country. I know it is possible to get 15 to 20 million of them. I know this.
Well,
I
got more people listening in Siberia than I got in America.
All I'm saying is that I know it's possible to get that many people in a
Right.
Look, if we show they stole this election from Donald Trump conclusively in four of these states, like it looks like we're going to get now, then I know they can be got. I know they can be got. Even if that doesn't mean you get the election overturned, they'll be there for something else.
Well, closing
and
thoughts.
I had to convince.
They're winding down on me. Bianca, you want to give closing thoughts to the show? And then, Sarge, I'll let you tonight go last. What's up, Mayor? Go ahead, Bianca. Go ahead, take a couple
Sarge,
minutes.
Sarge, I had to convince Joseph that he is the day that some of these black voices be talking about that Booker T. Washington talked about when he said there's another class of colored people who make a business of keeping the trouble, the wrongs, and the hardship of the Negro race before the public, having learned that they are able to make a living out of their troubles. They have grown into the settled habit advertising their wrong, partly because they want sympathy and partly because it pays, Joseph.
Yeah.
I got news for you, folks. Like Bianchi is alluding to, critical race theory and anti-racism is a big racket now. There is big money to be made, and it ain't just black folks trying to cut themselves in on it. There's a lot of white folks. There might be even more white folks trying to cut themselves in on all this dough that's out there with the anti-racism lectures, the diversity consultants, and all this other jive. Believe me, it's big money out here in this racket.
Yeah, like Tim Wise. Right. You remember him, Joseph? The white guy used to get around. Oh, my goodness.
No, I don't.
Man, what part of town do you grow up in? Sarge. I told you we were privileged, Sarge.
I guess so.
Amen. I could think of 100 ways I could make money in the anti-racism racket if I really want to put my mind to it.
Well, and you were discriminated against yesterday because we're black, right?
Happens all the time. These people can't withstand criticism. They cannot debate us. They can only narrate. And when we start exposing the narration for what it is, then they engage in Saul Alinsky's 12 rules for radicals, personalize it, polarize it, and freeze it, meaning you insult and criticize the person making the comments and not the issue itself.
You could be right, Sarge. You could be right. Well, I'll tell you what, tomorrow night we'll be on 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll go back into the prison depth conversation there, and You know, I went, even went to groups there talking about that, where that say prisoners' rights and put it on, and I didn't see one of them messaging me back. So, you know, hey, you know, we don't know who's phony and who's real out there, but I'll tell you one thing,
whatever,
I'm real. I know Sergeant's real.
Whatever
I know
you
Bianchi's
do.
Real.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever you do, Joseph, don't let them put their hands on your forehead. If they do, you gone. You lost.
That's what I heard.
See
hey.
You guys.
Hey, real quick. Hey, I have a friend that's going in for surgery. He said, I got to take the COVID test to get to go before I go to surgery. I said, no, don't do it. Don't do it. You know, and you know, but now I got to, you know, this, that. And this is a person that's awake. He's still giving in. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to do. I just don't know where to go.
They're scared.
What to say.
They're afraid. Death make a
They're
person
afraid.
Afraid. I see you guys.
Fear.
I might
meet
you on
right.
that other show. What's that show name again?
Show. Hey, everybody, 516-453-6058. 516-453-6058. I'm heading over there next. See you guys later. Good night.
Good night. Good night.
Oh, yeah. We'll try. I'm trying to wrap it up here. It won't let me.
If anybody wants to protest what we do or violate what we want, we just turn off the chip.
That's right.
Riot when things don't go our way. And if we lose a fair one, then we accept defeat with humility.